Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum. The ISF podcast is hosted by ISF CEO Steve Durbin, and every episode he brings listeners features timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, Steve speaks with Sean Doyle, lead for the Center for Cybersecurity at the World Economic Forum. They discuss the role of public-private partnerships in the current cyber landscape, the importance of running tabletop exercises to promote resilience, and improving cybersecurity legislation and regulation around the world to promote economic interests.
So, Sean, thanks very much indeed for joining me on this podcast. You are the lead for the Center for Cybersecurity at the World Economic Forum. Just explain to our listeners what exactly that means. What is your job? What does the World Economic Forum do in this area of cybersecurity?
Thank you. I think I need to explain a bit about the World Economic Forum first. So the forum is the Organization for International Public-Private Partnership. It works in a wide range of areas, but what that means is where there's a problem that crosses borders and can't be solved alone by the private sector, or alone by governments, or alone by academia, that's where the forum steps in to try and play a role. Cybersecurity is definitely that. Whether you're looking at high-level policy questions or just operationally, how, let's say, for countering cybercrime, how do IT infrastructure providers, how law enforcement, cybersecurity experts, everyone in between, how do they all actually interact and collaborate? So the forum aims to bring a very diverse group of experts and decision makers together in order to try and work towards solutions that can be implemented. Now, when it comes to the decision-making element, I think this is where the forum brings something. We're most known for our annual meeting in Davos in Switzerland every year, where we get heads of state, ministers, CEOs, chairmen of large and small companies together. And that's the tip of the iceberg for the forum. It's where we're seen most in public. The rest of the year, every day, someone like me in the forum is trying to identify and bring the right people into the room, help them begin to work together with each other, particularly with groups like, let's say, law enforcement and IT don't always have the same interests when they're trying to counter cybercrime. Try and support them in finding a way to work together and then bridging the gap between their ideas and recommendations that come from experts and getting to the decision makers at government level or at private sector level and making sure that the recommendations are actually acted upon. So I'll stop there and take a breath. Is that clear on the forum?
Yeah, absolutely. And tell us a little bit about what you specifically do in that, because you are the lead for the Center for Cybersecurity, as you've just outlined. Cybersecurity reaches, touches pretty much everybody in society these days. You know, I always say it doesn't matter whether you're delivering milk or whether you're running a stock exchange. You know, if you're using technology, you're going to be impacted in some way, shape, or form by cyber. So tell us a little bit about the sorts of things that you specifically get up to in your role.
In our center, so in the Center for Cybersecurity, when it was set up in the forum back in 2018, the forum concentrates on issues that are systemically important, that have these wide, diverse, and dispersed impacts. Again, cyber is very definitely one of those. It's, as you said, it's not just about securing individual organizations. It's about keeping critical activities, whether they're commercial or social or political or whatever else, going, that more and more being, if not cyber secure, at least resilient to cyber attacks, is what keeps faith in society going, as well as the actual activities of individual organizations. So what are we doing in that space more specifically? I mentioned already that for the last few years, we've been working with a mixture of law enforcement, cybersecurity experts, IT infrastructures, infrastructure providers, and NGOs to really bring them together on how to operationalize collaboration on cybercrime. What that ends up in, it's what you'd expect from an organization like the forum in one sense, is that we have reports we publish with recommendations and we go around waving those recommendations under people's noses to try and get them to do something about it. But also we concentrate very much on what operational collaboration can we undertake now. So as an example, at the recent RSA meeting, my colleague Tal Goldstein, who is our head of strategy, but also running this piece of work along with our partners there, looked at releasing a new tool, looking at how do we get all the different types of information, not just IT-related and cybersecurity-related indicators of compromise, but what can we learn about, let's say, a cyber criminal group's money laundering activities? Where are these other shared services, whether they're to do it, how they use their money once they've stolen it? what IT infrastructure they use, and try and help people identify, if you're going to go after a cybercrime group, what should you concentrate on to have the most disruptive impact? So that's one example that's kind of quite operational. Day-to-day, I think you're thinking about cyber resilience. That's where we're moving towards, away from this focus on pure cybersecurity and how to make everything at least feel secure, to really, I'm going to steal liberally some of our partners. So quite recently and in public, the chief executive of the Cybersecurity Agency of Singapore, David Koh, has said, look, we're now having to secure so many things that actually we need to think more about how we build everything. And it's not about building for security, though that's extremely important. But if we build everything as if it's an elevator, as soon as the security is breached, we're stuck. We need to think about resilience. And that's the example he gave, was thinking about building things as an escalator so that there's always a way, if the machine stops working, we can at least keep walking up that stairs. Now, when it comes down to what that means in practice for cybersecurity, our view is that because the degree of interdependencies between organizations and their IT activities has become so intermeshed and it's so difficult to understand, we need to have the mechanisms for active collaboration set up already. So we have concentrated initially on a kind of choice set of sectors. We have a cyber resilience pledge, which was released recently by the oil and gas sector. What that is doing, it's these companies saying that they're going to treat issues of cybersecurity as strategically important to their business, then making some key recommendations as how they can go about that. But I think the point is that they're committing to it. So we're taking, first of all, sector-specific examples and trying to ensure that there's active collaboration in a sector like oil and gas, or maybe you look at electricity grids or whatever it might be, but then also bringing in the rest of the expertise from the wider cybersecurity community and looking at these systemic issues that are important across the board and seeing how we can start building up responses to that. Where, again, the wider forum, rather than just me and my cybersecurity colleagues come in, where the forum is of particular value, I've found, is that if we have an emerging risk, so we want to look at what's happening with satellite technology and how that might impact our services here on Earth, or we want to know more about advanced manufacturing and what developments there look like, the forum has this huge wide network of activity that we can link into. Steve, I was talking for a good while there, so I'm just going to take a breath and see if there's anything you'd like to respond to.
One of the really interesting points you make there, Sean, is around resilience. And I do a tremendous amount of work with boards of companies all around the world across a variety of different sectors, oil and gas being one, but also telecommunications and financial services in particular. And one of the questions that I always get asked is, how do we work better with security leaders? So boards of directors obviously don't, in their view, always know the right language to speak when it comes to security leaders and vice versa. What are the sorts of things that you're seeing that will help address that question specifically?
First of all, communicating with leaders, there's thinking about the soup that they're swimming in. That's part of the thing that needs to change. So what we've been very active on is helping get the message across that cybersecurity is strategically important to your business. When we see CEOs or company leaders who've really gotten a handle on this, it tends to be either because they've had a very major attack and they want to respond to it, which is in a sense too late, or those who've grasped the idea that actually this isn't just an IT issue, it's about protecting the way in which value is created in their organizations. I think I brought up advanced manufacturing earlier, and that's a good example where the systems are so hyper-connected that it's easier for board-level staff to understand that this is something that if one thing goes wrong, we don't quite understand what the cascading effects will be. They tend to be beginning to think of cybersecurity and resilience as something that goes beyond just IT teams. They're not letting it get siloed. So that's one, it's changing that message. And we use our events where we have CEOs and chairmen to try and get that message across more and more. We have their peers who we believe have gotten the message to go out and share that as champions. And another way is a government policy actually makes a big difference. So we saw there was a response recently to, I think it was the SEC in the United States, one of the financial services regulators, saying that, look, there needs to be somebody with cybersecurity expertise on the board. And just getting that into the board, that's something that even if the expertise doesn't always exist now, it means that people begin to become trained in it. They don't have to be technical experts, but they will get to the point that they can understand it enough to manage the risk in a better way. So that's another way, is just government policy. And then it's also let's say if you're a security professional, it's finding the right balance of information that you're giving out. I know I'm talking motherhood and apple pie here. That can be a degree of trial and error with the board you're dealing with, trying to organize education and training for them as well. And I think cybersecurity exercises can be extremely useful in this because it makes it all real.
Right.
So between exercises, government intervention in certain areas, and also just changing the narrative so that it's not understood as an IT issue, that it's understood as something that affects business processes, organization process, and how value is created.
I think you make a very good point there about the cybersecurity exercises. Again, I was talking to somebody just the other day who was saying to me that, you know, one of the most important things that they had done in their organization was create, you know, in his words, a playbook for responding to cyber attacks, cyber incidents, because the challenge that they had been facing was that people not only perhaps didn't understand their role, but when these things happen, you don't have the benefit of time. And so having worked through some of those scenarios beforehand, having everybody understanding the role that they have to play was really valuable, not just in potentially dealing with the incident, but also in terms of raising the level of awareness across the organization, not just the board, as to everybody's role. So certainly, I think that's a hugely important point. The other question I very often get asked, though, is around return on investment. And one of the things that I think everybody has struggled with for some while in the security space is being able to, hand on heart, give a really valid assessment of what the return on security investment is, and then secondarily, what it actually should be. Any sort of insight or guidance that you can give people listening on those issues?
So if the insight I would provide is that if you're confused, you should be. So it is extremely difficult currently to measure the effectiveness of a large number of cybersecurity services. That doesn't mean that they don't work. It means that it's very difficult to know, do they work, one, and will they work for you? What I'd recommend to your listeners is there's a paper out in the last 18 months by Professor Kieran Martin in Oxford University and a gentleman called Joe Hubbock, I think, called The New Market for Lemons, Cybersecurity. And it looks at just exactly that. It actually compares it to the used car market in the sense that the person selling the service has an unusual amount of information compared to the person buying it. And actually, you can't, it's very difficult to understand what you're getting into there. What might be solutions for that? So if we look at what's being invested in at the moment, I'm working here not off raw numbers and data, so I need to apologize in advance. I'm working off anecdotally what we've seen and what we've heard is that there is an enormous amount of investment going into cybersecurity, particularly from the likes of venture capital firms, but it's being directed very often to these kind of point-to-point, very specific solutions for very specific problems. Makes absolute rational sense to invest that way, but it means that if you're buying these services, you're faced with an absolute smorgasbord of things to purchase or not to purchase, and you don't know which one's going to work or which one isn't, and you end up trying to buy as many as you can possibly afford. It makes it very difficult to understand what's working, whether you're getting a return for your money, and to also argue for budget going forward. What might be a solution to that is either, let's say, a number of governments have organizations that invest in the private sector, specifically in areas that are going to be both commercially valuable, but mightn't get the investment otherwise. And I think looking at countries like Israel, the UK, that will spot startups that can build something broader, that's more holistic in their services, and help invest and bring them up and give them the time to actually build up these services in return. Plans like that could help the entire market. I'll be perfectly honest, it's a problem without a clear solution at the moment. But again, return on investment, very difficult to know what that will be. Currently, very difficult to really measure that. I would say that from what we see and hear, there are enough people thinking that this is a problem across the private sector and governments and academia, that research will go into this. I hope that planned and strategically thought through investment will go into this, though that may need to come from government agencies, and we will move towards something better, if not a pure solution.
Very often as well, when we talk about cybersecurity and some of the areas we've just been touching on here, I think we run the risk of being criticized for focusing on large enterprise. And yet, if we look at very many countries all around the world, the real engine of commerce is the SME, the small business. And one of the challenges that, again, I'm often asked about is how does a small to mid-size enterprise really ensure that it is getting cyber right? at the different stages of its growth? Because if you're a large organization, right, you've probably got money to be able to invest, or at least resources that you can draw upon. For a small enterprise, particularly these sort of startups, you know, it really is a choice between literally keeping the lights on, perhaps, and investing in something that perhaps is an intangible for many small to mid-sized organizations. What sort of advice can you give to that small and mid-sized space as to why they should perhaps be considering cybersecurity in the way that larger organizations do, but perhaps more importantly, how they might be able to go about funding it and what would be appropriate in that space?
So in relation to why, it's because compared to these larger companies, the impact can be disastrous in a way that the larger companies have the resources to bounce back from some of these attacks. It can shut down, say, mid-sized companies, it can just shut down quite successful mid-sized companies. So a ransomware attack, for instance, can be absolutely disastrous. So the why is kind of clear and there. And I think awareness is raising of that. But the why you should, it matters less if there's not a route to doing something about it for a lot of these companies. Now, there are some models that can be followed. I mean, if you look at private sector models, MasterCard have done an awful lot of work with their very, very wide network of SMEs that they work with to at least to improve the payments element of security. So that's where we see the larger systemic players playing a role in shaping the way the market operates. And there is a role for that because, simply put, government can't be protecting everything. They'll neither have the resources nor the time. But other approaches which I've seen, which I personally liked and thought are effective, if you look at the Center for Internet Security in the US, they have their top 10 or top 20 controls, but they also do specific areas of work with things like public school system or local electoral systems in the US. And they're able to provide insights and best practice for these smaller organizations, be they private or public, and kind of create that very clear route of, we're not going to be 100% secure, nobody is, but here's some steps you can take that will make you an awful lot safer very quickly. So to sum that one up, creating very clear advice for these small and medium enterprises, and that's something that anyone who has the capability should have some role in, governments, larger players in the market. And then also just taking the active steps. If you're a systemic player in the private sector, that you take these active steps to protect the wider market and your clients and supply chains. And that's a role that many companies at systemic level, they do take on, in fairness to them.
One of the things you mentioned there that I'm sort of duty bound to come back to you on is ransomware, because obviously everybody is talking about ransomware these days. And I'm interested on the forum stance on this. In the past, we have seen people like law enforcement, FBI in particular, perhaps, being quite clear about the fact that organizations should not pay ransomware payments. And yet, we also know that because the problem has increased, that boards are actively discussing what their strategy is, should be in terms of responding to a ransomware attack, something that I would entirely support so that you know what you're going to do before it actually happens. But what's the forum stance on whether or not ransomware is something that you should effectively pay for as a cost of doing business going forward? Or is it something that we're going to see, in your view, more regulation, legislation coming about to actually prevent companies paying ransoms?
So the forum does not have an institutional view on ransomware. I'll talk a bit more about what I've seen personally here.
Okay.
And where I see the difficulties in making clear recommendations on this. So where it's very easy to make a clear recommendation is, you're funding criminals. They're going to come back. You may not get any of your data back. That's it. Where it's more difficult as well is also about paying out in particular, is that whatever response you have, whether it's getting insurance for it or whatever else in preparation, the attackers are very much planning around this, that they'll break into your company for a while to check out what your insurance level is, what the payout is, and make a request just below that. So what happens for your individual payout, if that then spreads across the market in any meaningful number, it very quickly becomes difficult to insure you at all against these things. So the impact of payouts, of your individual payout, it's going to fund human harm. And then on a wider scale, it may end up that actually you're not able to get the protections you might be able to get from insurance or otherwise. So it is not a good thing to be paying out. At the same time, I have never personally been faced with having to make that decision. And it may be for some organizations, particularly the smaller and medium ones, it can be a decision of keeping my business alive or not. So I don't have clear advice. I would say where we've seen examples, public examples of organizations refusing to pay out, like the Irish government refused to pay out when its health service was attacked a year or so ago.
Yeah.
They refused to pay out very publicly. I don't know the details of it. It wasn't quite shaming the attackers into providing something back. but you know, they didn't pay out and they were able to recover a considerable amount, not without paying. I don't think I've fully answered your question there, but do you want any follow-up on the ransomware question? I feel like I answered half and I've forgotten the second half of what you said.
Yeah, I think you did get close to it. I mean, what I was saying was that increasingly, I'm certainly seeing boards having the discussion around what their strategy, what their stance should be with regard to ransomware. And the second part of my question was more around legislation as to whether or not you felt that we would see legislation increasing that effectively would outlaw the payment of ransoms.
Yeah. So on legislation relating to ransomware, this is a gut feeling I have, but my sense is that yes, there will be pressure coming from so many directions for something to be done about it. There will be pressure coming from law enforcement agencies, I imagine. There will be pressure I also expect from the insurance agencies to at least clarify when ransom is paid, when it isn't, or whether it's allowed in what way. There will be pressure from governments as well, because they're seeing their infrastructure attacked. And I mean, civilian infrastructure, such as hospitals, again, seems to be quite common.
Yep.
So I expect there will be a legislative response. Exactly what that might look like in any one country or any one region, I don't know. I don't have any particular insight there.
Right. And one of the things that, of course, is of concern to a lot of organizations is this patchwork quilt of legislation that we're starting to see emerging, which obviously increases the burden on the organization, the security officer, and indeed, if organizations have them, the legal department as well. Any sort of advice or hints and tips you could give for multinationals that happen to be listening to this about how they can stay abreast of legislative changes? And indeed, is the forum doing something in this space to help people?
So I have seen some examples of good practice there, and the forum has been involved in the same. So for multinationals, this is a fair complaint. If you're operating across countries, there's an awful lot of regulations which are essentially asking you to do the same thing, but in a slightly different way and evidence it again in a slightly different manner. And this is problematic for a large multinational, but it shoots down across cascades across the rest of the market, because you'll have 8 or 9 systemic companies in whatever market, and their supply chain partners who are trying to supply as many of these systemic players as they can are then having to do the same again for each and every company slightly differently. So the problem is multiplied all the time. It's a very real one, and time goes on to paper compliance activities as opposed to security. Now, there has been a recognition of this by many regulators and many governments. It's something there is a will to discuss solutions towards it. I believe particularly in sectors that are critical infrastructure related, like financial services. The difficulty is this, that every state remains sovereign and every state is required as well to tailor things to their own environment. So it's not that it's completely insoluble, but there are a couple of just basic blockers. You can't tell a government to stop doing things the way it wants to do it, but you can figure out ways that ameliorate or make the problem a little bit lighter. So where have we seen a good example? The forum worked on cybersecurity and fintechs from 2018 to 2022. And it's exactly the problem we said, that the systemic banks were saying, we have this huge problem with cross-border legislation. And the fintechs down the line were saying, it's even worse for us because we have to deal with all of your different versions of it, plus the cross-border regulation. And we don't have the budget to deal with security often in the first place. Regulators couldn't make a first move on that because they said, even if we fix things from our end, if you're quote-unquote fix, if we make everything a little bit more aligned across borders, we still have the problem of the systemic players doing their own thing and transferring that across the market. So the problem isn't solved. What they were happy to see was the financial services system begin working together to map out where the overlaps were, to create bodies of evidence as to what, let's say, big bank A, B, and C would accept from all of the smaller players so they could all interact with each other. And that simplified the process within industry. The work we did there, we made recommendations saying, please do this. We found a group called the Cyber Risk Institute, based out of the US. It's a nonprofit that had set up through its membership of large banks down to community banks and was beginning to implement this very well. And it developed something called the cybersecurity profile, which is, it's exactly that. It's a huge mapping of all of these international regulations and saying, actually, if you do X, Y, and Z, you've solved for all of these countries at the same time. Regulators are beginning to acknowledge this and say that this is a valuable approach that industry can take, where they start by removing the disharmonization within industry. And then that allows governments and regulators to say, actually, if we start taking action, it'll have a real impact.
And I think it's a really good example as well of the role that the forum is able to play in terms of perhaps not solving a particularly complex problem, but at least trying to facilitate different solutions that private sector in particular would find acceptable in that space. Let me ask you one final question before I let you go. Cybersecurity is moving at a tremendous pace. I mean, it's a hugely fast-moving environment, very exciting for people to work in, really demanding, I think, for the people who do work in it, and obviously very rewarding too for those that stay the course. What are some of the emerging changes, developments that you see in cyber over, say, the next couple of years that people need to be aware of?
The primary one I would say is, look, the extent of interdependency between organizations. It's not just that it will increase. It's that these interdependencies will become more difficult to see and to understand. And that means these, let's say, supply chain attacks, like the likes of that Kaseya attack from a year or so ago, where a shared services provider in Florida was attacked and ended up shutting down supermarkets in Sweden. That these kind of attacks are going to become possibly more common, but certainly more problematic. And there's also the risk of these attacks happening, you know, at multiple places in the same time. And even though they're not connected, the attackers aren't working together, the combined impact is much more damaging. So I think looking ahead as to how these new emerging and simultaneous systemic risks that will arise, that's the next thing that needs to be discussed. I think we're still at the point of really understanding where these interdependencies are. And I'll give you another example. When the conflict in Ukraine began, there was an attack by, I can't remember who it was assigned to, but there was an attack on the Viasat satellite company. And that had an impact on comms in Ukraine, but it also shut down electricity generating windmills across Central and Eastern Europe. And that was not part of the target. And that's one attack. So the dependency on these satellites, for an example, wasn't understood, because it wasn't widely understood how satellites have changed from essentially a bent pipe up in space, which had one was made to do one particular thing, shot up into space and kept doing that, into something that's software enabled and now provides multiple services that can be changed over time. So lots of things are changing in the market at the same time, which makes it more difficult to understand what the services we run are actually dependent on. What stage we're at now, or what stage we see experts who work through the forum at, is identifying that problem, beginning to tease it out, agree on what it is and say, okay, what research do we need to do? What do we even need to start exploring so we can develop a response to that? So I think something we often have in cybersecurity, the future looks a little bit scary, but at the same time, I think we're overall much better at collaborating than 5 or 6 or 7 years ago and beginning to get ahead of these problems and start discussing them before they hit us. So that's the positive part.
Fantastic. And of course, as I always remind people, you know, it is a very immature space that is developing exceptionally quickly, and one that we always need to try our best to keep abreast of, because changes happen literally overnight and from minute to minute. Sean, it's been wonderful talking to you. Thank you very much indeed for shining a light on what it is that the World Economic Forum is up to in this particular area, and indeed sharing some really interesting examples too of some of the ways in which not just the forum is working, but in which other organizations are adopting some of the recommendations and collaborating all around the world. So, Sean Doyle, thank you very much indeed.
And thank you very much.
Thanks again to our guest, Sean Doyle. Listeners, you can find a link in the show notes to the paper Sean referenced in his comments, and we'll also link other resources from the ISF in the show notes. We'll be back with a new episode next week. But in the meantime, we want to introduce you to the ISF Analyst Insight podcast, which goes in-depth on the hottest topics in information security. In every episode, ISF analysts hand-select active security professionals from ISF member organizations to discuss how the implementation of ISF research is uniquely applied to their real-world context. We hope you'll listen, and of course, we'll put a link to their show in the show notes. We'd love it if you'd help us grow our audience. Most podcasts are discovered through referral, when fans who love the show tell others about it. So please share the ISF podcast with other professionals like yourself, so we can reach new listeners. It really makes a big impact for us if you not only follow the podcast, but if you give us a 5-star rating. So thank you in advance for that. You can find us on LinkedIn by searching CEO Steve Durbin or Security Forum. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox and Tavia Gilbert, with music by Alexander Filipiak. Senior producer Katie Flood. Mix and master by Kayla Elrod. Thanks for listening.